Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me, as always, is Jason.
Jason, yeah!
In the past, I say, with me, as always, Jason, and there's a pause, like an awkward pause. And then you go, hi, Rob. I'm glad you're not doing that anymore, because I find that a little irritating. So thank you.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
I'm glad we can be honest and open.
Of course we can. Jerk. In public. It's a documentary podcast, after all, true. Right? That's the point.
We're all about transparency.
We sure are. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. I'm feeling a little more rested now.
Are you?
After weeks away from Gen Con.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's helped.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure that I fully recovered. That's just because I've been working so much. It's tax season, you know? Tax season. Not like income tax season, but like property tax season. Right. And with my full-time day job, I deal with a lot of property taxes.
I would have loved it if you hadn't clarified that and people had assumed we did this in April.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. No.
What is that kind of beer there?
This is Harp Lager from the makers of Guinness.
Oh.
It's just Harp. It's nothing special. It's another one of those beers that my father-in-law left in the fridge. It's been in there for about...
What's the last one I had from you that was like that?
I don't remember. It was probably something terrible.
It wasn't good.
Yeah. I don't know. This is one of the better beers that my father-in-law will buy and leave places.
Well, that's good.
It's fine. I mean, whatever. It's beer. And I felt like I could use beer.
So, I'm not drinking beer tonight. I know, which is weird. It's like we reversed roles.
Right. You said you're a little sick?
Yeah, I just have had a cold, so... Mm-hmm. That's why I have, like, the sexy voice going on.
A little deeper. Yeah. Sexy Jason voice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I just have thought beer would be a poor choice. Because most of the stuff I drink is, like... It's like thick and heavy.
Did you hear? Did you hear the good news?
What?
It's great news. Fat Tire is now available in Michigan.
What?
Yes.
When did that happen?
It happens this week.
Oh my gosh.
This week, effective this week.
I'm taken aback.
Not only did I see there was a sticker for it on a cooler at the local beverage store, adult beverage store.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, well, we can say the name. There's no locals here. Tiffany's.
Doesn't matter if
yeah, whatever. I go there twice a week, probably. There's a sticker...
In your defense, it's on the way home.
It is, right.
So...
There was a sticker on the glass of the coolers, the big coolers at Tiffany's, and then I heard it on NPR.
Wow.
And they were talking... It was a Michigan radio thing, and they said, the blah, blah, blah is brought to you by whatever brewing company, now featuring Fat Tire in Michigan.
Yes. I'm super excited because... at Gen Con, that's always one of our traditions, is that we go to the bar. There's one bar we know of for sure.
Yeah.
Always has Fat Tire on tap.
Yeah.
And it's always great to have that again. And mm-hmm. I've got it in the bottles, and it's pretty good, but it's better on tap.
Well, most beers are.
Yeah, I mean, duh.
Duh, but yeah. So I thought you'd be happy to hear that.
I'm really excited about
that.
Yeah,
you're going to get some on your way home, right?
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised. My wife might be upset. I still have a lot of beer in the fridge.
Yeah, okay.
And we're going to Colorado in a few weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to be bringing back like 3 cases of Alaskan beer because you can get that out there. So Fat Tire may have to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about Alaskan beer on our gaming podcast soon. So that's cool.
That is good. That's good. What you been playing, man?
So I've been playing something I've played quite a bit of before and I've talked about before, but
yep.
I want to talk about a little different tonight. I've been playing Settlers of Catan with our game group.
What? Really? Since when?
Well, I know. Oh, my gosh. It's so crazy. And I've kind of mentioned before that that we kind of house rule a lot of stuff. And I thought, why not tell people about the house rules so they can judge me and tell me how broken those house rules are?
What a terrible idea it is.
Right. So anyways, I'm just going to talk about a couple of those things. I love the game. I love the standalone, the normal game. I don't think I could play it anymore because we've house ruled it so many times for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who know Catan, there's the base set, and you can get a 5-6 player expansion. So first off, we bought the 5-6 player expansion, but we play it with 4 people.
Hmm.
Makes the board a lot bigger. Yeah. There's a lot more stuff to go for, a little less fighting, a little more stretching your legs. To complement that, we thought it would be fun if we made it into a team game. And you're like, Settlers, a team game? Really? Yes, it actually works really well. So in Settlers, the idea is you trade resources with other people, and you earn resources off the board.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, you can build stuff. So you build roads to get to places, and then at the end of roads, you can build settlements and then cities. So what we did to kind of mishmash the mechanics are, you and your partner share roads. I build a road, he could build a settlement on it. And then in addition to that, the other things, these things called development cards, that are basically specialty cards that let you get more resources or screw another player. So we share those.
Mm-hmm.
So I have them on my turn, and then I lay them down, and I pass them across to my partner on his turn. So you're only allowed to play one a turn. And what's cool is, in the normal game, if I buy a development card, I can't play it right then. I have to wait all the way until it gets back to me.
Mm.
But now, my partner can play it on his turn, which is only two turns away, because it's, you know, we sit alternating.
Yeah.
And also, you can trade with other people. That's part of the big part of the game is trading. But we make it so you can't trade with your partner. So you and your partner, we can't swap cards. You can trade with other people. Every once in a while, we've managed to pull off a trade through our opponents. I'll give you some brick for this, and then boom, you can swap off for the other person.
Yeah.
But in general, can't trade from your opponents. With your partner, sorry. And then, in addition to that, when you play development cards, some Ori roll a 7, it allows you to move the Baron. And the Baron is this mean guy, and when you put him on a hex, that hex no longer produces anything until he leaves. And you get to take one card at random from a player who's on that hex.
Okay.
Or they could just give you a card that if you allow them to. So one of the tactics we'll use is I could put it on my partner's hex that my partner's on, mm-hmm. and then he could give me the card that I needed. So I would put it on his bad number, but still, it's a penalty for him. So there's a lot of strategy involved. For anybody who plays, they know you play to 10 points. We play to 15 with the partners. And the other thing we do, and you can do this without playing teams, and I found this makes Catan way more fun to me. I always feel like Catan takes a while to get going. What happens is, in the beginning, I place a settlement, then everyone else places a settlement, and then it comes back around, and then I place another settlement. And when I place that second settlement, any resource it's touching, which is the maximum of 3, I'll get those resources, one of each, right? So you start the game, at best, with 3 cards. So if you're the first player, you're going to do nothing. You're going to roll. Maybe you're going to build a road. Chances are you're not going to do hardly anything on your turn.
Hmm.
So we came up with our quick start rules, where both settlements you place, you get the resources for both of them. So now you have 6 cards in your hand, right? To start off, instead of 3. So twice as many cards. And then we had to make it so when you roll a 7, if you have more than 7 cards in your hand, you have to drop those. You have to get back down to 7, right? No, you have to get rid of half. I'm sorry. You have to cut half your cards out of your hand. So one of the things we thought would be cool was on the first turnaround, since your player 4 has 6 cards and a bunch of rolling is going to happen before it gets to him, he might have 12 cards in his hand, you know, by the time it gets to him. Or maybe usually not that many. I would say he'd probably have around 8 or 9 cards in his hand or her hand. So when that happens, you can really lose to 7s very quickly. So we made it on the first round. 7s don't count. It's a reroll. And the other thing we did that anyone can do is Catan makes these event cards. On these event cards, you flip the event card, and it's got a number on it, just like you rolled the die. Mm-hmm. The idea of that event card deck is it's statistically accurate. So there, because in Catan, you know, you've got low numbers and high numbers. It goes from 2 to 12. 2s don't come up very often, right? Statistically speaking, and neither do 12s, because there's only one way to make those. 11s aren't so great either. But, like, you know, 12s and 2s, you have to get snake eyes or you have to get boxcars, or you have to get doubles, basically.
Sure.
So what we did was we go around one turn with everyone and we roll, and the next turn we flip a card all the way around. So that guarantees that your 2s and your 12s are going to come up. And it also guarantees that your mid numbers, your 8s, your 9s, your 6s, your 5s, those are going to come up statistically more, for sure. So that's kind of a neat balance to the game. Plus, those cards have things on them, like on a 12, I think everyone gets to take a free resource and that kind of stuff. So it's just a case where house ruling has made the game a lot more fun for us. I still love the original game, but I feel like house ruling has made it it's just given that little extra edge. Hmm. I'm not... by any way saying that, you know, I'm smarter than Klaus Tuber, because that guy's amazing, but I think for our group, it fits, and I think that's what you need to weigh if you're going to house rule.
Sure.
You have to say, does this work for our group?
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, as long as it makes the game fun,
sure.
right? unless the designer is sitting there with you and they might, like, punch you or something, I say go for it.
Give you a dirty look.
Because the point of the game is to have fun, right?
Yeah, right, so, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so, which... Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that's, you know, we haven't talked about this whole house rule idea at all. And I mean, that's something that lots of people do in, like role playing games, you know? Yep. I mean, that's really common. Everybody plays D&D a little bit different. And virtually nobody follows D&D by the rules exactly.
Right.
As an example. But that's much less common in board games and tabletop games.
Except for, like Monopoly.
Well, right. Monopoly, free, you know, parking. Free parking. Yeah. But, yeah, that's interesting. I don't think there's any games that we house rule here at our house, apart from when we've played D&D before. I'm struggling to think of anything.
I will say that I've noticed thinking about designing games more often.
Yeah.
Makes me feel more comfortable with house ruling, right?
Yeah.
Because when I first thought about house ruling, when we first started doing it with Catan, we all felt like we were cheating. Right? But it's not like you're in a competition here. Mm-hmm. The competition is have fun.
Right. So, that's true. The end game is let's have a good time.
So if you're just playing in a free format of just having a good time, why not make the game more fun to you?
And if everybody's cheating, then nobody's cheating.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
That only applies to card games, by the way.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
How about yourself there?
Well, you know, I thought I might talk about Bandidos. Which is a game we played at Gen Con. We actually haven't played it since we got back from Gen Con, but I wanted to mention it because it was cool. It was one that I talked about in our pre-show because we had bought tickets to play that. It's from Baksha Games, Bakshaa, I believe, and the designer's name escapes me. And sir, I apologize.
It's Ludvonik Melblanc.
No, it's not.
It's not.
Nope.
What game did he come up with, though?
Lots of them. He did Cash and Guns.
Well, I know, but he did another game that we
something
liked.
Something else that we liked, yeah. But no, it was
not that one.
No, this guy. No, Bandidos. We actually, when we sat down to play it, we played it with the designer. He was a very, very nice guy from Canada.
And his name was not Luke.
No.
Okay, well, point, game, set, match right there.
Super nice guy, though. Made the game really easy for us to pick up and enjoy. It's a strange mix. The idea, which we talked about before, so I'll kind of go past that quickly, is that you're some kind of a criminal whose home base is somewhere in America, just on the American side of the Mexican border.
Right.
And you're trying to run across the border to pull heists in Mexican banks, and then flee.
Right.
And it's primarily a card game, but you also are moving your piece around a board. That's, you know, set up like a map of the border from California to Texas.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So there's some, I don't want to say there's worker placement because you only have one guy that you can move around. It's mainly a card game with a piece that you can move around a board.
Okay.
But it's neat because, you know, in order to cross the border, you can't really have any weapons. We'll say it this way. In order to rob a bank, you need a guy, you need a weapon, and you need a getaway vehicle, okay?
Right.
But, you know, every time you pull a heist, your guy gets heat on him. And your gas, in order for your car to get away, you need a full tank of gas. And if you can buy gas or you can steal gas, but if you steal gas, you get heat on you. And every time you try and do something, you have to roll a die against how much heat you have.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then if you roll poorly, you're gonna get caught by the cops and go to Mexican jail, and that's terrible. And some weapons you can conceal when you're crossing the border into Mexico, but you got to ditch them before you cross the border back in the U.S. And other weapons you conceal no matter what. And some weapons you can't conceal at all. You can't conceal an AK-47, no matter what, even if you're going into Mexico. You can't conceal that, you know?
It might be tough.
Right. And everybody plays as a specific character. There's several. I don't remember how many, but there's quite a few characters in the deck that you can play as. I think it's a 4 or 5 player game. And if your character is a single person, then you can ride over the border on a motorcycle. But if your character is actually two guys, like I was playing as two brothers,
mm-hmm.
then they couldn't ride a motorcycle unless the motorcycle also had a sidecar, you know, so you need a car with two seats in it. And right. if you have the two guys and you have an accomplice, then you need to drive a car that has three seats in it. So you can't ride the sidecar, you know,
right.
this kind of stuff.
Logic.
Right.
I like it.
Yeah. But one of the neatest things about it is this money idea. Yeah, there's American dollars and there's pesos. Okay. and you need to get American dollars to buy equipment. But when you're stealing money from the bank, you're stealing pesos.
Right.
So by differentiating between dollars and pesos, it makes it easy for you to separate your working cash from what you stole. And one of the things I really liked about it is you can always see right away how much cash everybody has out there on the table. Because as soon as you get a card that's cash, that's American dollars, you put it down right in front of you on the table right there. There's no question. There's no concealing. You just put it down. There's no reason to conceal it. Everybody knows how much cash you have. And then if you need to buy a car, you gotta spend that cash.
Right.
Okay. But the game is also designed to support trading. So if somebody else has a card in their hand for a car, you know, I want to buy that. Hey, you can on your turn say, hey, I've got an El Camino for sale. I don't want it. Anybody else want it? And you say, well, I've got a the Mystery Machine van or whatever, you know, whatever kind of van is. I'll trade you a van for the El Camino. Okay, sure. Or maybe you can say, I've got an AK-47. I'll trade you an AK-47 for that car.
Nice, because okay.
He needs a weapon. I need a car. And I know that he's in America right now. He's not going to be able to use that weapon because he can't use that if he's crossing the border because he can't conceal the weapon. Or you could say, hey, this car that I've got, I've got this El Camino. It's worth a whole lot more than your AK-47. So, okay, well, I'll give you an AK-47 plus $200.
Right.
You know, so that trading, that kind of bidding thing works really well in that if you're playing with people who are open to that. And that was really cool. Just in general, everything felt really tight. It felt really open. The game had great style, great design to it. It seemed to flow really well. And we were really, really happy with it. We haven't played it since Gen Con. We played it once at Gen Con. There were three of us playing, and it was great. We had a lot of fun. It says it's playable for two players. I'm not sure how compelling that would be because you wouldn't have as many options for trading and interacting with other people.
And you're not going to be as forthright with your trading when there's only one opponent.
Exactly right. So I'm not sure that it is going to balance down real well for two, but we're certainly going to give it a try. We're definitely going to bring some parties with us.
Right.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. And again, gosh, I really feel bad that I can't remember the guy's name who designed it, but he was a super nice guy. We'll make sure it's in the show notes and get a shout out on there. But check it out. It's a very different kind of game, and I recommend it highly.
Awesome.
Cool. Moving on then, I guess. To the mechanic of the week.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to talk about a mechanic that I don't think I like.
Oh.
Those are the best kind.
Okay.
The mechanic is player elimination. That would be a game where four people start playing. By the end of the game, there's only one person left.
Yeah.
So here's what I don't like about that. Watching your friends play a game that you've already lost is not fun.
It sucks.
And I think most people would agree that, except for some very specific circumstances, it's not fun.
Yeah.
So, my challenge would be,
uh-huh.
Is there a way to make that fun? Is there a way to make player elimination valid? Because I think there are two types of player elimination. There's outright, boom, your character's dead, you're out of the game.
Yeah.
Happens in role-playing games sometimes.
Yeah.
There's also kind of subtle player elimination, where you're playing a game, and it's a game where it becomes very obvious very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to lose?
Yeah.
And who's going to win?
Yeah.
And or at least I'm in last place. There's absolutely nothing I can do to make this game better.
Yeah.
So I think focusing on the real player elimination of you're out of the game.
Yeah.
Sorry about your luck. No fun, right? So is there a way to make that fun? Is there a way to give an active role to players who are eliminated?
Mm-hmm.
That said, I have an idea. Literally just came to me as I was saying this.
Okay, go.
So, haunted house.
Haunted house.
You are paranormal investigators in a haunted house, mm-hmm. right? No, I don't like paranormal investigators. You are...
I don't like those.
You are
teenage... Screw those guys.
You are, no, it's not that I don't like those guys. For this mechanic.
Okay.
You are teenagers, uh-huh. right? Good-looking teenagers. You break into a haunted house, right? Okay. And one by one... Your characters die.
Wait. Why can't you be good-looking teenage paranormal investigators?
Because of the next mechanic here.
All right. I'll shut up. Sorry.
Paranormal investigators are trying to capture evidence and all that jazz,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I actually have a game about paranormal investigators that I will pitch someday.
Okay.
So, but that is not this game.
All right.
Four teenage kids, good-looking teenage
kids. Gotta
be good. That's how they always are, right?
Yeah.
They go into a house, haunted house.
Scantily clad?
Probably.
They better be.
Right. So they go into the house, to check stuff out. And they start to die, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what happens in those games.
Mm-hmm.
This might be better for a party game with more players. This might be a more the merrier game.
Mm-hmm.
As they die, you then become the evil spirits. So you're out of the game. You've mm-hmm. lost the game, right? You cannot win. Now it's time to screw with everyone else.
Okay.
So now you're an evil spirit. And through some awesome mechanics that we have not come up with,
mm-hmm.
you are able to still influence the game mechanics, in a way.
Which are as vaporous as the ghosts themselves.
That is like the best quote from the show ever. So, yeah, I'm trying to think of a way, I guess, to say you're eliminated, uh-huh. but you can still have fun.
Yeah. The first game that comes to my mind is Risk.
Yep. Risk actually fits both criteria of you can just get kicked out of the game.
Yeah.
Or you can just...
so totally boned that yep. what's the hope?
People just, like, ignore you. Yeah. Get some armies, whatever.
Right.
I'll deal with you later.
Yeah. Yeah, Risk... I love Risk, but I love Risk when you're playing with like all six people that you can and taking it all the way down to one. Starting Risk with two players or three players, even four players, is not as good.
See, but two-player Risk, at least you don't have player elimination yeah. issues.
But that's what I was going to say, is that when you start at six players, the bad part about six-player Risk is that four of those people are going to end up sitting there with nothing to do.
For probably a long time, because the last two always take the longest.
Right, yeah.
And you know the first dude out, he was out in 10 minutes, right. guaranteed.
And he wants to just go home.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he can't, because his yeah. ride is in first.
Yeah. Man, that dude is so pissed right now.
Yeah, he should be.
Yeah.
Because that was poorly designed, and not like your name. Like,
yeah.
The game was literally just poorly designed.
Right.
That was not meant to be a pun. It just happened.
I gotcha. Yeah, yeah. So that's the first game that comes to mind. But, you know, that game succeeds despite that. The other game that I thought of is Sentinels of the Multiverse. And to me, that's the one place where Sentinels maybe has a hiccup. In that when you're playing a four-player game, four players versus the villain, and you're in a really hard-fought battle, one of those heroes can die.
Right.
And be out of the game. And then you flip that character card over, and that guy still has a minor effect on the continuing action, but not much. Basically, all that player can do is just kind of sit there and watch. And that's a bummer.
Right.
That's a real bummer. I agree with you. So I feel like if you're going to have... I would not want to have player elimination in a game at all. Because in your haunted house idea, that's not player elimination. That's just shifting their gameplay, you know?
Well, but I would argue that if they can no longer win, it would be player elimination, right?
Yeah.
If it's you go into the house and all the players start to die,
yeah.
and when the player's dead, the player's out of the game, technically,
mm-hmm.
the way to remedy that would be to build in mechanics that bring them back. Maybe they could win. Maybe it becomes one versus the mob, right? I mean...
Yeah.
So it starts out, right, and you're a group trying to break into the house and you're trying to do certain things. Maybe you're trying to steal items or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're trying to kill a ghost. I don't know. You're trying to do something.
Yeah.
Mechanics don't matter. Quote me on that. Mechanics don't matter. So you know, you break into this house and the game then shifts from who's, like, it starts out as everyone's on a team, right? We're all trying to do this. Then as people start to die, now there's two teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as there's two teams, we say, which team's going to win?
Mm-hmm.
The evil spirits or the kids? Now, granted, that is not player elimination. Because yeah. you've now just given a win condition to the ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a different kind of game then. And that's actually really interesting. And that's another one that's worth looking into, honestly. To say that, you don't know who... At the start of the game, everybody's on the same side, and then as the game moves forward, you split your intentions. Somebody's going to die, a couple of people are going to die, and then all of a sudden they have different motivations and different goals.
Right.
Which could be a compelling idea. That's not really player elimination, though. Yeah.
Well, no, because I was trying to fix
yeah,
player elimination.
Right, fix your... Yeah, yeah. Fix
player. Listeners, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
The Building the Game podcast has fixed player elimination.
Yeah, by not using player elimination.
Yes. Risk? Guess what? Ghost armies. Like in The Lord of the Rings, the third movie. That ghost army that comes back and like yeah. wipes everyone out?
Right.
I guarantee if they played Risk, they would win every time.
Well, yeah.
Because like no one could kill them.
No.
Which was kind of like...
Because they're ghosts.
It was kind of like...
It's a narrative cop-out.
As they say.
Yeah.
Right? Because... Like, yeah. There was nothing you could do.
Right.
That Why did they just call those guys to begin with?
Well, yeah.
Hey, go throw this ring in the mountain.
Yeah. It was a total chintz. Yeah. I mean, Tolkien had a lot of good thoughts and good characters, but his narrative was not the most solid.
I believe that.
You know.
So, but I digress. Player elimination. Player elimination. The only way I can see to fix my opinion of player elimination, because I think it's stupid. If somebody has an idea of a game, though, that's out there, that where player elimination doesn't suck.
Yeah.
I just don't see how, I mean, like, if you're out, you're out.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I sit down to play a game, and then all of a sudden, I can't play that game anymore, and everybody else is still playing, and I'm just sitting here watching.
I think
that sucks.
If you're going to have player elimination that worked, it would have to be a, like, once the game got to a certain point, it was nearing the end, then people could die.
Yeah.
Bloodbath City, that's cool.
Yeah.
But before that, it's just...
Yeah, see to me, I like that idea in like, if you're playing a role-playing game, you know, pen and paper role-playing game, that allows for that... I'm thinking of some of the stuff that I've heard the role-playing public radio guys do when they're playing Call of Cthulhu. Call of Cthulhu is a very heavy in player death. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, very likely your character will die at some point, especially if you're playing a campaign. And so those guys are really cool about just rolling up a new character and saying, well, you know, hey, I'm this new guy who came in. But when they make that really fun is when they were playing Cthulhu Dark. Because that game is just about insanity, that approach to it, at least right. What they take is about insanity and craziness. And, I mean, they were having characters die like this. But they set the scenario up where you're saying, holy crap, there's a zombie outbreak in this city, and everybody is just somebody in the town. What are you doing? What are you doing? And when somebody dies, well, they just, on the spot, make up a new character who's another guy who lives in that city. And because Cthulhu Dark was such a versatile and open and easy right. system, it was really easy to do
it's
that.
Easy to do, right?
I feel like I got off track there, though.
Well, you're basically, again, it's not
player elimination. It's not player elimination. It's
character elimination.
Right. Exactly. Yes, it was character elimination. You're right.
Right.
So they're still not doing... Yeah, okay. So player elimination just sucks.
That's the verdict. We have labeled it as sucking.
We hate player elimination.
I mean, yeah, I can't think of a redeeming quality for it, because I will always feel bad for that person
right.
who's not.
Because it means that guy is not having any fun anymore.
Right.
Yeah, and that's too bad. He's just gonna go watch TV or poke at his phone until his ride wins or loses.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
If you're that guy, let us know.
Dude, I'm so sorry.
We're sorry. Play our games.
Yeah.
They'll never have that. We right. promise.
Someday we'll have a game out you can play. I promise.
And there will be no player elimination.
No, none of that. We don't tolerate that kind of garbage.
Nope. Not going to happen on our watch. So that's my mechanic of the week.
Okay, I like that.
I feel pretty good about that mechanic.
Yeah, I think you should. I think that's a good conversation to have.
Yeah.
Shall we move on?
We shall. And this now is practicing the pitch.
Yay!
With Rob Couch.
Yeah, my announcer voice is way better than yours.
Yeah, I also have a hoarse voice.
Yeah, because you've been sick.
I could try and do a better announcer voice if you'd like.
I don't care. So listen, I do have a game that I'm kind of chewing on in my head right now that I'm really kind of interested in. I'm kind of excited about it, but I don't have it fleshed out enough that I'm ready to talk about it really. So I think I just kind of want to throw out a general idea that I've had, and maybe we can bounce that back and forth. That's cool with you?
That sounds great.
All right. I recently reconnected with a buddy, a guy that I used to spend a lot of time with years ago. And at the time, he was an aspiring tattoo artist. And now, I believe he works in Detroit, and he full-time is a tattoo artist. And I'm really, really proud of him. And I will figure out what his shop name is, and we'll put that in the show notes. And his Twitter handle is @WareGild. So that's @WEREGILD. Johnny Andre. Johnny, we call him Johnny Inkleg. He is a super, super nice guy. I love him to death.
Johnny Inkleg?
Johnny Inkleg, that's what we used to call him.
Dude, that's like a mobster name, man.
But he had ink. I mean, the dude is inked all over, and I'm sure he's even more so now.
Yeah,
I haven't seen him in years. He's a real artist, and so that started me thinking about, you know, I wonder if there's some way you could make a game around tattoos.
Yeah.
You know? And it started me thinking about The Illustrated Man, which is that old Ray Bradbury story. but the man whose whole life is tattooed on his body, and it's the illustration of his life, of who he is and where he's been, what he's done, kind of thing.
Okay.
So I was thinking, could you somehow do a game inspired by tattoos as a storytelling game? Or maybe you have some thoughts as a different way to approach that.
Well, I mean, not as a storytelling game. My first idea that comes to mind, sure, is that you've got, everyone has a fold-out thing of a person,
mm-hmm,
front and back,
mm-hmm,
and then you collect tattoos to put on them.
Okay.
Right? Like, you collect cards with tattoos to lay on them, or little chips with tattoos, like, oh, this is an arm sleeve, this, mm-hmm, is, you know, maybe you get bad tattoos.
Okay.
Like, and you regret them later.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you've seen the game Gloom before.
I've heard of it, yeah.
It's a card game that you play with clear cards.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And all the cards are clear, but they have some kind of an image printed on them that's obviously not clear, not see-through. I haven't played it, but I've looked through the deck before. Actually, a friend of ours bought it at Gen Con this past year, so I'm looking forward to playing it. But I don't know if the fact that they're clear feeds into the game or not. But I had that thought, too, that maybe you would have a game board that was just kind of a form of a person, and then you would have these clear cards that had tattoos on them, and that you would then place them as a clear overlay over the form of the man.
And that might be better if you had one person and everyone was working on that. You're all, yeah, different tattoo artists,
mm-hmm,
trying to vie for position on the body.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The other way that you could do that is if you don't want to do the clear thing, you could have chipboard cutouts that are in the shape of tattoos or something.
Yep, that you can just put on the person.
Right, but I'm not sure where to take it from there.
Well, I mean, okay, obviously if it's just laying tattoos, it's a very simple game.
Yeah.
I would assume the size of the tattoos would have different point values.
I would think so.
And the goal would be...
Different costs, too.
Right, different costs and different point values. And the goal would be to get as much
ink as possible.
Right, of your own ink as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
So, to do that...
So maybe it would make more sense for everybody to have their own figure tattoo.
The thing I was thinking was, you could go two ways with it. One, it's a game where maybe you're trying to create sets and stuff on your own, and you know, you're going to get like aesthetic bonuses and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's just a competition game where there's a limited amount of space on this dude, and everyone wants to tattoo as much as they can on him.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you said male, but really, if you want to sell more, it should be a female.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't want to be cheap about it. You could just have the kind of...
We don't want to be cheap about the game about tattoos and well, product placement.
You know, I'm just thinking, you know, I want it to kind of be about the art and not necessarily about the cheapness.
Right, fair enough.
You know what I mean? I don't mean to say the tattoos are cheap, because so much of it is so artistic.
Right, but some of it is not artistic.
It's just kind of cheap and dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I kind of like the idea of having one body. And you're trying to, like... Because then you have an easy endpoint to the game, right?
Yeah.
There's no more space where anyone can put a tattoo. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd have to have... if you're laying cards on top of a body, on top of a human form, you would have... Every card would have to have a predetermined shape to it. You know, like this would be a foot. This would be a shoulder.
Or some could just be smaller, some could be larger. You know, one mechanic that I think would work is if, remember Heap? We talked about Heap.
Yeah.
And one of the mechanics with Heap was the ability to, like, whenever you defended an attack, that automatically predetermined what the next attack was by setting a color. Better example is actually Nightfall, which you haven't played yet, mm-hmm, I don't think. But I demoed at Gen Con.
Yeah.
You bought it. I demoed it. Mm-hmm. So when you go to cast a person... or play them, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm,
they have like a yellow orb, right? They have different colors. Say their orb is yellow. It's a big yellow orb. And then off that orb will be two smaller orbs that are possibly the same color, possibly different colors. So your next person that you would chain in that casting would have to be one of those two colors.
Oh.
You play them, and then now you've got your next one, you know? And you could chain sometimes six cards right in a row. Other times you couldn't. So what if each tattoo... pointing at different angles had a color or something on it that would allow you to play another tattoo. So your positioning of that,
mm-hmm,
would point to kind of where you could put the next tattoo, so you could try and manipulate it so that people couldn't play more tattoos.
Yeah.
Try and make it harder, or set yourself up to play a tattoo.
That's a cool idea.
So,
I like that.
That kind of limits how the playing would go and adds some strategy.
Right, right.
I still feel like somehow you'd want to work in the cost.
Yeah, I know.
Like, what if every turn the player, not the player, the body, the person who you're tattooing, had a body budget? And each player had to work from that budget. And maybe each player, based on their last play, got a portion of that budget. So the budget amount is random, right? Like, every turn, the player, you're gonna roll or something for the center dude, for the body. Yeah. You're gonna roll for the body, and whatever you get, boom, that's how much money he has to spend on tattoos. And each of your tattoos has a price on them. So now you, as a player, need to decide, in addition to what fits, what can you afford to play?
Okay.
And maybe, I think it would be cool if there was a way to skew that.
Mm-hmm.
To say, like, everyone gets $400 for the tattoos, plus whatever, you have something that gives you maybe different bonuses.
Yeah.
So, maybe chaining colors would make it cheaper. If you could, you know, if you could chain that color system. I'm just using colors because it's easy to talk about right now.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want to rip off Nightfall, but maybe if you could chain colors, that would give you a discount. Like, oh, this tattoo's 100, but if I can chain it to another one, it's only 75.
The idea being that rather than doing a whole new tattoo, you're adding on to an existing image, maybe.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, or at least making it aesthetically, it blends.
Yeah.
So, it's not like you've got, like, a cool, like, artistic scene of, like, a snowfall, and then the Powerpuff Girls next to each other, you know?
Yeah. Okay. See, what I have in my head here then is that you would be laying these cards on the figure, and the figure would have to be big, you know. I mean, we're thinking full game board size, maybe even kind of long, maybe like 17 inches long, maybe 24 inches long.
Okay,
this figure that would be on the table, and it would just be kind of a simple form, a simple human shape.
Yeah, front and back.
Right? Yeah. I would probably, you could play either as the front or as the back. On one side of the board is the person's front, on the other side of the board is the person's back.
Because you're saying it wouldn't fit otherwise.
Right, yeah. But if you could make it big enough, you could make it front and back both sides. That would just give you more play area.
Right.
That would make sense, yes. Yeah, so yeah, I think you'd have
to
do that.
Slightly smaller and have both sides and you'd end up with more play area.
Right. And what I'm thinking then is that each card would not just be a tattoo. What it would be, it would be a section of that body with a tattoo on that body. And so what you're doing is you're actually playing the card on that body. And I can see it, picture it in my head, but I'm trying to think about how to describe it.
So you're saying, like, each card would have, like, a shape to it. Like, this is obviously a shoulder.
Yeah, right.
And it's a tattoo meant for that. Right. Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, and so if you're playing the hand, right, you know, you want a tattoo on the hand, you know, it might be at some kind of a weird angle so that the hand is on the card, but you also might get a little bit of the person's hip on that card, because the idea is that you would lay it down on the play area, but you don't want it to obscure any of the original board.
Right.
And then depending on what order you play that stuff in. Let's say they've already got a tattoo on their hip, right?
Right.
Okay? Somebody's already played a tattoo card on the hip. And then later somebody plays that hand card, and part of that card obscures part of the tattoo on the hip. So then whoever played the hip card will lose points for that.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because the entire tattoo is not showing.
Right.
Some other artist has obscured that tattoo. I think that could work.
Yeah.
I think that could work really well.
I'm just thinking about face tattoos.
Face tattoos, yeah. Yeah. And that would be neat, is you could have, like, three different face tattoos. You could have one card that's, like, the whole face. You could have a second tattoo that's, like, half of the face. Only half of the face is showing. Another card that's the other half of the face that's showing.
Only one that's a single tear.
Yeah, you could do that too. But it would, in that case, it would kind of be a little bit like Flowerfall that we played. Did you play Flowerfall with
us? No, but I get it, yeah.
Yeah, as you're dropping these cards in Flowerfall, some of those cards end up laying on top of other ones and mess up what other people did.
Right.
And so this would be kind of the same idea. As you continue playing, somebody else could put a card that either obscures all or part of a tattoo that you already placed down, and that you wouldn't get as many points for that.
Maybe you could have some that were completely blank. Like, it's just the dude's face again.
Yeah.
It's like a laser card.
Laser removal,
you
yeah.
You put it down, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah. I think that could really work.
It actually sounds like a fun game. Yeah.
It does, yeah. I would play that game. That's a lot of... There's a lot of... It sounds very simple, because you draw a card, play a card.
You know? See, and I kind of picture you'd have a hand.
Well, yeah, you'd start with like a hand of four or six or something, right. And then you play a card, draw a card,
right.
And you can pick from that hand. Yeah, I think you'd have to do it that way.
Right.
And then you'd have a score tracker as you go, and every time you put a card down, you get however many points are on that card, but then later if somebody obscures your card, you'd have to remove points.
Yep.
You'd have to do it that way.
I love it. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
I think that could be excellent. Yeah.
Look at us just making games on the fly here.
Wow.
Bam!
We're like machines, man. Aw, yeah.
I mean, whether or not other people think this doesn't sound like a terrible idea, who knows?
Well, let us know, listeners. Come on. You know, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that we need feedback about, you know?
Right.
If this is a really dumb idea, tell us this is a dumb idea. You know? Then we'll shut up about it and we'll try other things. But to me, this sounds very different. Very, very, very unlike anything that I've seen before, at least.
Yeah. You know what the biggest problem I have is? Every time I picture the face, I just keep picturing the operation guy.
Yeah.
I can't stop picturing the operation guy.
Yeah. You're right, though. It kind of would have to be a chick, wouldn't it? Maybe. Well, no. The base game would be just some dude, like a male figure there. And then the expansion would be a whole new board. But maybe this would be the sequel? I don't know. Anyway.
Because there's no reason to make an expansion that's a whole separate game.
Right, yeah.
Though Nightfall, the game I referenced, actually does that, so...
Oh, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it has expansions that are whole different playable games.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which, to me, kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
But basically, at that point, they're just capitalizing on the name.
Yeah, right.
But I can't blame them for it. Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, if that's playable with the old decks and the old game, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, I guess.
Right.
Whatever.
Well, I'm not begrudging it. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's good. I don't know if we have any more thoughts on that. It was kind of a shorty there, but...
I think we should do more of that, where we just kind of are...
Yeah.
Coming up with something that's kind of fun.
Right, that was kind of fun. Maybe sometime down the road, when we start kind of running thin on some of our own ideas, we can bounce some stuff back and forth like that.
Yeah. Or maybe like today, when you ran thin. Yeah. In your defense, I know you're really excited about the other game you want to pitch, but you just...
I just want to nail down
sometimes
some specifics.
It's tough to pitch something a little prematurely.
Yeah.
There are some game ideas I know that I've had where I'm like, name of game, base mechanic, and I feel like I can just sit down and just pitch a game.
Yeah.
But there are other games where that's not. And by pitching them early, you kind of do them a disservice.
Yeah. Right.
So we don't want to do that. I mean, we want to pitch a solid game that, or at least as solid as we can.
Yeah.
You know, that people will hopefully enjoy.
Right.
And then hopefully someday we can work on, you know?
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah. Rock and roll.
One more note. What would you call this game?
Boy, I don't know.
So.
We
try and avoid the word tattoo.
Yeah. I feel like I kind of want to use the word ink.
But... Johnny Inkleg. Maybe that's the name of the game.
Johnny Inkleg. I don't know. I need to call Johnny. I need to. I'm ready for another tattoo. It's been too long for me, so I need to get in touch with Johnny.
You have one tattoo?
I have one. I need another one. It's time. Johnny, years ago, Johnny promised me that he'd draw me up a Frankenstein to put on my shoulder. I think maybe it's time that I...
Like a full-on Frankenstein?
Yeah, like a Frankenstein.
Just, not you like know. Your cat? His cat's name is Frankenstein.
My cat's name is, I'm a big fan of Frankenstein as a character. I should contact him, see what we need to do to hook up so he can give me a Frankenstein on my shoulder. It's time, I think. It's time.
All right. On that note.
On that note, we'll move on to plugs and wrap this episode up here tonight. What do you want to plug tonight, Jason?
I wanted to plug a place called thegamestore.com. It's a place where you can get some game components and stuff, which can be good for prototyping, also good for trying to price out some ideas. It's like meeplesource.com, same type of thing.
Yeah.
Where you just can find those bits and pieces. And it's amazing looking at these sites. I mean, they have some really different stuff that you wouldn't think of. And that's just kind of awesome. Some of it actually gave me ideas. Just looking through the stuff. Like, I wouldn't use that in a game, but that makes me think about this. So
yeah, you know, you mentioned that before, and I was looking at their website. They have neat stuff. They have like, you know, like sand timers, you know.
Yep.
And they have little spinners, like I'm looking at right now. You can get an 8-pack of spinners. Why? I don't know, but it's cool. You can buy extra Monopoly money at this place. That's
super cool.
Hey, you
might need extra Monopoly money. That's like, you know, Mayfair. The Mayfair booth, they always sell the Catan pieces.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Just in case
you lose that stuff. You've lost any. Yeah. So, yeah, I think one of the probably the biggest values for us is the fact that they sell just bulk pawns.
Yep.
Of different types. So that could be really useful for prototyping in the future.
Most definitely. It's almost worth just picking some of those up to have some at random. Right. So that when you want to prototype something,
right,
you're like, hey, I'll just pull out my pawns.
Yeah, and super cheap. Like, I'm looking at this, a set of 8 pawns or a set of 10 pawns is like $2.50. If you're working on a worker placement game and you need multiples of the same color, just buy 7 or 8 sets of those. You're going to have more than you'll ever need.
Yep.
You know, and it's super cheap, so.
Totally.
Yeah. Cool.
So, yeah, I think that's a pretty cool thing to help out budding game designers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to mention indentedblankdice.com, which is very much along the same lines. Indentedblankdice.com, it's just a real simple thing. They sell blank dice, but they're special because each face is indented a little bit to fit a sticker, so that you can put whatever kind of sticker you want on there. And because it's indented, it's not rolling on the sticker, so it's not abusing the sticker. It's not abusing whatever surface you put on there. It's rolling on the edges.
Right.
Which is nice. I think that's a really cool thing.
Do those work? I wonder if the white ones work with the wet erase.
They might. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it would be certainly worth trying, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I guess any color would probably work with wet erase if they work.
I just thought white, because, you know, it's white.
Yeah.
Standard wet erase background.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think actually they had a booth at Gen Con this year. I did see them out there. I didn't stop to look because I only noticed it once and I couldn't find it again later, but... yeah, it's a cool thing. I've been thinking about getting some of those for prototyping the shop class game that we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, saw blades.
Yeah. So, and you know, they don't just sell the dice, of course. They also sell blank labels that you can stick on them.
So, awesome.
Ready-made die cut
made
stuff.
For it, so, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, super cool. What else we got?
I think that pretty much sums it up. We didn't have any questions this week, so...
Yeah, okay. Well, it's kind of a shorty episode for us. That's okay. We're delivering you guys awesome content in a compact form.
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
We're at least not just rambling out about more stuff we don't know about.
Right.
Yeah. Because we respect your time.
We sure do. I guess that'll definitely wrap us up then. Thank you everybody so much for listening to Building the Game. We really appreciate it. As always, check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can also send us an email at buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. My Twitter handle is @poorly_designed. Jason is @JASlingerland. You can check us out on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star rating if you would. Pretty, pretty please. Give us 5 stars and write something nice. That would be awesome. Send us your comments or questions on the website or by email. We promise we will read them on the show live. And anything else?
I think you covered it with your awesomeness.
I am pretty awesome.
It's true.
More awesome than you.
I know.
And on that note, we'll say goodnight.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
For some reason, that did it. No, it's still some hissing.
Stop, though. Watch it. That's what's doing it.
Surprising. So that's one of these or both of these are poorly shielded cables.